This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 227, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My next book, titled Aspects of Alien Abduction, will be published on May 25th, and you can pre-order the Kindle version on Amazon. This week, I'm talking to Alan Levine about disclosure and its implications. And are you a member of Visit the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance?
Yes.
And so what's that? How does that work?
Well, it was Dan Herrera originally formed it, and the idea was to bring both artisans within the entertainment field and people actively researching and politicians all together to push, you know, the narrative forward for disclosure and to place into – he used the entertainment field to educate, basically. And I haven't been personally involved in any entertainment projects going forward at the moment concerning disclosure, but there are those out there that are doing that. And that would include, you know, authors as well who are writing about the subject. But that was the idea. And so members like myself who are also in the entertainment field, as well as, you know, researchers have aligned together to bring, you know, the information forward.
So with disclosure, do you think something's going to happen? I hear every now and then somebody saying, somebody who really seems to know what they're talking about, say, oh, it's this year, it'll be this year, or it's next year, but then it never happens.
Well, yeah, I posed this question to a number of podcasters 2 weeks ago. It was kind of a thought experiment. What would qualify as disclosure to you personally? I mentioned it to Richard. I mentioned it to a number of other podcasters. And Richard actually did a 1 hour segment on his fireside chat. And disclosure means something different really to everybody. What would be proof positive to an individual that we are being visited by non-human intelligence? And what do we know about them? What information do we have about their craft, about their civilization? Everybody has a different take on it. And in the many decades I've been researching it, the goalposts have moved again and again and again. One of the things that I lament that even those that are actively researching the phenomenon currently are they're still trying to prove that UFOs are real, which I go like, oh my God, how can you take that position that hasn't already been proven? They're even going back as far as the early 50s, there has been radar confirmation, signals intelligence, photographs, videotape, mass sightings, physical evidence at landing sites. Metamaterial has been recovered. There's more evidence for the phenomenon than there is most other scientific hypotheses. So, in my opinion, it's already been proven. We are being visited by non-human intelligence. We have captured their aircraft, and we do have some bodies that died in either crashes or shootdowns. So, to me, disclosure has happened. Whether you accept that we're being, you know, visited by non-human intelligence or that they might even be colonizing the planet, now is left to what I call the Marco Polo effect. When Marco Polo returned from Asia, he came back with physical evidence that of the Chinese culture and their superior science, math, technologies, and brought examples back brought eyewitnesses back, wrote about it, but the community in Venice just dismissed it. It would be over 250 years before it was accepted that it was a real thing. But it was over 250 years before anybody accepted, you know, what he was sharing was true. And the reason I believe they didn't accept it is there was an ontological shock that there could be a far older, far superior, far more intelligent culture than the people of Italy had ever conceived. They just didn't accept it that they weren't the apex predators of the West. And I think that's what we're experiencing now in the general public. It's not that there's not enough physical evidence out there to prove that this actually exists, that we actually are being visited. It's just that for hundreds of years, Western civilization has believed beyond any doubt that, oh, no, we're the apex of evolution, that there is nothing, you know, vastly more intelligent or older or had more scientific development than we do. And even though, even people that I've spoken to that say they believe, yes, they do believe UFOs are real and that, there is non-human intelligence interacting with our species. When you drill down, they start getting frightened. They really start getting frightened. What are the implications? And I believe it's something evolutionarily innate in humans that they just like, oh my God, you know, there's something better than us. I can't believe that, and that's frightening. And what might they do? Might they take over? And where does that leave us if we're, you know, not as evolved as they are? So that's what we're, you know, looking for, what would be disclosure proof that this is actually happening. It is difficult to put your finger on today. The goalposts keep moving. People want absolute proof that we have a UFO, and they want to see a live alien. And I think they want the president to bring him over to their house and shake hands or something, because it's just that no amount of proof. If you say, okay, we've got very good video evidence, we've got military video evidence, although there are better. The three videos that came out in the New York Times in 2017, these were gun camera videos, flare videos of military encounters with UFOs. There are better ones. There's in the 2010 Chinese airport mass sighting, which has two videos that there's, once you see those videos, in my opinion, there's no other explanation that other than what they captured in that video was an extraterrestrial craft. It shows instantaneous acceleration. It shows, you know, anti-gravity propulsion. It was photographed by dozens of people from different angles. It was recorded on airport video. It's, to me, without any doubt, a UFO. Yeah, it's, you don't need to go further. But people look at any video today, any video that comes up on the internet, oh, it's AI, it's AI, you know. Okay, not everything's AI. And we can look at the provenance of some of these videos, who took them, where they go. And the other thing is, they'll say, oh, no, this is some psyop. You know, any military individual or individual coming from the intelligence arena, or even high-ranking politician that says it's real, oh, it's a psyop. why would they want us to believe we're being, you know, interfacing with a alien intelligence if it wasn't so? How does that advantage any of these people? I hear it all the time. People commonly claim Lou Elizondo, who was with the ATIP program, a program out of the Pentagon that was studying UFOs. Oh, he's a disinformation agent. What? I mean, what are you talking about? I mean, he's not putting the government in a good light. He's saying, yes, they're hiding this from you. And, you know, we do have recovered craft. We do have recovered bodies. And the government, there's members within the government that are stealing money to look deeper into this. How is that disinformation? Why would the government want to put that out there? It doesn't put them in a good light. So, the end of 2025, there were some challenges. I truly believe with the people I've spoken to, in the DC area, that there was a concerted effort to roll out a presidential acknowledgement that the phenomenon was real, but then everything was scuttled by the government shutdown, and we rolled into 2026. And the rumor is that sometime between May and at the end of July, between the beginning of May and the end of July, that again, there is a planned presidential acknowledgement that the phenomenon is real. Now, President Trump came out a couple of months ago and said that he wanted the files concerning UFOs, aliens, etc., released. And then he doubled down on that in a tweet, formerly asking the Pentagon and all related offices to release these files. And now people are going, well, that's not an executive order. You don't need an executive order. Even the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, acknowledged verbally on camera that he took that tweet as an executive order. Under the Constitution, the president only has to declare something declassified to declassify it. There has been an argument that there was a presidential order back in the 50s that prohibited the, at that time, the, I believe they referred to it as the Atomic Energy Agency. It's now the Energy Agency, that the president didn't have authority to release anything declassified there. And the White House counsel has argued, no, that's ridiculous. So the president can declassify anything. So his request that this material be declassified is in the works. The Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, says he was working on it. Representative Luna, who is on the secret task force that's been tasked with bringing this information forward, sent a letter to the Pentagon after the president's tweet asking for 40-some video files that were referred to her from Jeremy Corbell, who's a researcher and podcaster in the field, and asked that these specific videos of military encounters with UFOs be released by yesterday, the 14th. And the Pentagon did not release it. The Pentagon claims it was a snafu on their part, that the letter wasn't sent to the right office. It wasn't released, but Jeremy has already said, we have the videos, he's seen the videos, and that tells me that so has Luna, and they are in possession of them. And they said, if they don't release the videos, that he, as a journalist, through the committee, will release the videos. So I would expect in the next week or two that if the Pentagon doesn't cough them up, that they're just going to release what they already have. Now, these videos are supposed to be high resolution 4K videos taken by military encounters, satellites, and other signal platforms UFOs of various kinds. There was a leak recently of a handful. I haven't reviewed them. I saw some stills of what it purported to show. And again, having seen literally hundreds of videos and film footage of UFOs over the decades, they weren't any better or any worse than anything else I've seen. And I guarantee you, once it's released, will it move the needle for the general public? I almost doubt it, because they don't want to believe it. They do not want to believe that there is a superior civilization visiting Earth, possibly colonizing parts of the Earth, and interfacing with the government, and that the general public has been lied to for decades, and they've believed the lie. That's another thing that I think people resist, is they don't want to feel foolish, that they've believed for decades that there are no UFOs. They've been told this again and again and again by government, and they don't want to believe that they've been fooled all this time, because if this, the biggest conspiracy theory, the granddaddy of all conspiracy theories, if this was true, if this is true, what else do we not know? Is what other conspiracy theories are really true? This is the granddaddy, and I go like, you know, it would be almost ridiculous not to believe it at this point. What more would you do?
You know, I live in Britain, and I watch this all going on across the pond. I wonder if perhaps this whole disclosure thing might be too focused on the USA. Doesn't the Russians know about this? The Chinese, the UK know about this?
Yes. And I actually did a podcast last year concerning that there are rumors out there that another country may jump the gun and actually release this information before the United States. I don't believe it would be China, although people have shared that China has moved significantly, advanced their science significantly based on the UFOs that they've captured. But I can very easily see the Russians stepping forward and saying, hey, you know, they wouldn't say, I don't think they would say, oh yeah, we've had these UFOs, captured UFOs for, you know, decades. They would say, hey, you know, we captured a UFO in Ukraine. The Ukrainians are trying to smuggle it out of the country. We intercepted it. We have it now, and we're inviting scientists and engineers from around the world to come to Moscow to take a look at it and to learn what they can from it and share that with us here in Russia. And people would beat a path to their door to do that. And it would be a big win for the Russians. Now, the reason they may not do it is because they don't want us to know how far advanced they have taken the science. And but again, if they haven't had any movement, if they've only gleaned a few things, possibly that would be an advantage of that. We also heard that Brazil may step forward, understanding that Brazil has captured craft, and they may step forward and announce it. So the possibility is out there. U.S., we're just very vocal. So we get out there and shout at the top of our lungs. But this is a phenomenon that's all over the world. We suspect that Israel has some, Japan, China, Russia, Brazil are some of the places that we've heard have downed crafts.
I suppose that if the USA did disclose a load of information, the other countries wouldn't want to look like they just don't know what's going on. So they might start disclosing as well, and just to say, yeah, we know as well. We're not that stupid.
Well, I think the fear is not that they would disclose, but they would demand access. If you come out and say, yes, we have captured craft from an alien civilization, what's the UN going to say? Well, that doesn't belong to you. That belongs to the entire world, and we want access to it. Do you want to give access to the North Koreans? Do you want to give access to Iran? No. And that's exactly what we'd say is, no, this is ours, and nobody gets to see it except our allies, maybe. Bob Lazar says that when he worked at S4 on the Nellis Range in Area 51, that for a time the Russians were working with the Americans on these captured craft. And then there was some big discovery, and they chased the Russians out, and they, you know, were allowed back on the base. At that time in the 80s, there was joint space exploration between the United States and the Russians. And apparently they were sharing some of this information with them. How far we have gotten since then, who knows? My suspicion is that somewhere, maybe after the 80s, that this technology, at least some of this technology, was stolen by rogue members of the military and now being used for illegal purposes. Disclosure for me is the exposure of these illegal legacy programs that are trying to back engineer this information. We know that at least 40 whistleblowers that have worked in the legacy back engineering programs have testified to the Senate Select Intelligence Committee over the last 3 years. I've been pushing for the committee to release the at least a redacted transcript of their testimony, and to forward that testimony to the special counsel in the House, and from there, a recommendation to the Department of Justice to go after these illegal, these rogue actors that are stealing money and illegally hoarding this equipment for their own selfish purposes, illegal purposes. A lot of these whistleblowers have spoken to the Senate Select Intelligence Committee, go, well, we don't want to speak out. We're in fear of our lives. We're in fear we're going to lose our pensions, et cetera. They're not working for them. I don't know if they grasp, even though they may be working in a military facility, they are not working for an acknowledged program sanctioned by federal government. They're working for a rogue element within the government that are using this technology for their own personal purposes. They're not going to get a pension. They may be silenced after they retire. We've seen in the news recently that at least 10 scientists and military officials connected with these programs have disappeared recently and under very mysterious circumstances. The fact that these people, you know, that have worked in the program think that they're going to lose their pension. There's no pension coming. These are rogue operations. And for me, disclosing who these people are that are operating in the black here and bringing them to justice and stopping the theft and stopping the murders and disappearance of these scientists would be disclosure for me. My understanding is that there are at least some members of the Select Intelligence Committee that are fearful to release this information. the committee does not need to go through the president to release a transcript or summary of what they've learned over the last 3 years. There's 21 members of the committee. They merely need to vote a majority to release a transcript. They did it in 2014 when they released a transcript concerning the CIA's illegal interrogation programs at black sites overseas. Also, back in during the Reagan administration, when the Iran-Contra incident was brought to the Congress for investigation, 11 high-ranking Pentagon officials were indicted and convicted for running this operation, selling arms to the Contras and forwarding military equipment to Iran. So these operations do occur. People working within them may think they're working for the federal government when they're not. And we need to stop this. We need to find out what technology they do have and bring that forward to the general public so it can be used constructively for everyone's good and not be used in some illegal operation for these rogue cartel members, basically.
Do you think there may be a situation where there's the old guard who've been protecting this for decades, but now they're leaving, they're maybe retiring or maybe dying, and the younger people are starting to come through who are more likely
to speak out? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to, people go like, and I hear this all the time, not just about the UFO phenomenon, but a big thing here in the U.S. right now is the Epstein files. Oh, they've only released half the Epstein files. Okay. The claim is there's 6 million files and they've released 3 million. People, I don't think they understand, the general public doesn't understand, when they think of a file, they think of a file as being in an office, filing cabinet, and you go to the filing cabinet, you open it up, and you pull the file out. That's not how it works. 95-99% of all the files held in Washington in offices operated by the federal government all over the United States and all over the world are not digitized. They're not on computer servers. That's a more recent occurrence. The majority of files are kept off sites in what I would call, you know, they're almost city-like conditions. They're, in fact, I listed these for a friend who was asking the question. There was more than a dozen just in the D.C. area. These are like little cities, warehouses full of files. When you go, when you tell someone, whether they're in the FBI or the NSA or the CIA, go get me this file from 1955. You're on an exploration into the backcountry to try and find this. It's not at your fingertips. You just don't sit at the computer and pull up, okay, give me everything about the Epstein files. There are no file cabinet drawers marked UFOs only. In fact, there are designators that we know, like for the CIA, had at least one designator that referred to UFO files, but I'm sure that's just one of dozens. And over the years, it's changed. And as you're sharing, a lot of the old guard is gone. They're dead. There are no files. Because just like myself, as Jim told me, and I learned this, you know, later working, you know, with Homeland Security and other agencies, when it's regarding intelligence, you don't write it down. You don't leave a paper trail. That's the stupidest thing you could do. Everybody that's ever gotten in trouble is because they left a trail in a file. what was it, the program, mind control programs in the 60s. The only reason that came forward, the CIA was working on this mind control plans, is because they didn't burn the files. There was one tranche of files that was left in a warehouse that they had missed, and they didn't destroy them. And so we learned all about their mind control experiments on private citizens and here and in Europe. And that lesson learned. A lot of this information, when someone dies, the information dies with them. Colonel Curceau, who was head of the Foreign Technologies Recovery Department in the Pentagon, who wrote the book The Day After Roswell, he shared a great deal of what he knew and what he had learned. But I'm certain that when he passed away, there was a great deal more information that went with him. And same with Jesse Marcel, who was head of intelligence for the 509 bomb wing, atomic bomb wing, who investigated the Roswell crash. I'm sure when he passed away, he took with him many secrets that we'll never learn. So yes, some of this old guard is leaving. New people, the people that I've heard speak about this, are young, very ideological individuals that have stepped forward who want this released. And to some extent, you know, I've wrestled with, you know, people say, oh yeah, they can handle the truth. Honestly, when I speak in depth to just average Joe on the street about this, they're either have heard a podcast or they know me and they're asking questions. I don't know that they can. I really don't. And if you were to release this technology suddenly onto the market, you are going to disrupt the stock market. You are going to disrupt the energy sector, the material sector, science and medicine. There's going to be some big disruptions. How much do you want to disclose? The president came up tomorrow and says, yes, it's true. We're not alone. There is a non-human intelligence. How far is he going to go? If he says, you know, we're in communication with them, everyone's going to want to know more. They're going to want to see a craft. They're going to want to see alien bodies. And so will the rest of the world. And there are some countries that may not have this stuff that are going to be afraid that we may use it against them, and they may take preemptive action. If you go like, hey, you know, if the U.S. has anti-gravity technology, they may use that against us. They may have plasma weapons that they're just keeping hidden that they could use against us. We need to hit them first before they use this stuff on us. So that's also a concern.
There's also the thing with, you know, how far can you go with disclosure? Because then they might have to say, well, the aliens communicate with telepathy, so ESP is real. And then do they say, yes, alien abduction is real? There's people being taken. There's nothing we could do about it. And then after that, there's people who say that they have out-of-body experiences or their consciousness has been abducted and their body stays. So does that then be a thing the government's saying, actually, yeah, the afterlife is real because consciousness can exist without the body?
Well, wonder if they said, you know, we are communicating with these extraterrestrial races. They're far more evolved than we are, and science is more evolved, and actually you're living in a virtual reality. This is not real. This is just one of millions of other virtual realities. And what would happen then? I followed scientists like Donald Hoffman, who believes that we are living in a virtual reality. And I've looked at the comments on podcasts that he's done. And you think that people can't handle extraterrestrial life. They sure as hell can't handle that this may be a virtual reality. They just come unglued. It's like, what's the sense of even going outside? What's the sense of doing anything if this is all just a construct? They're just, it's like total depression and despair and just like giving up. What would happen if that's the truth? So, how far do you go? How much do you tell? What do you offer as proof? I've never seen a Texas class nuclear submarine, but I know we have them. I don't expect the Navy to start giving tours of it. Are we going to give a tour of a working, UFO? How much are we going to show? Are we going to talk about the propulsion, what it uses, how we have used it? If Bob Lazar is telling the truth, and frankly, I do believe he is telling the truth, that we have a working, at least one working craft, where does that put our space program? If we've had anti-gravity propulsion technology since at least the 1980s, what the hell are we doing with these solid propellant and liquid propellant rockets? I mean, that's like a friggin' joke. So there are a lot of implications that come along with disclosure. Fundamentally, though, I believe you cannot hide, you cannot continue to hide reality from the planet. Whether it's just amounts to there are extraterrestrial civilizations visiting us, and that's the truth, or telepathy is true, other forms of extrasensory perception is true. Can we move objects with our mind? Is out of body travel possible? All these things are possible. Are we going to go that far? How would it disrupt society? Who knows? But you have to grow up sometime and deal with it. There are a lot of things about becoming an adult and learning the reality around us that it's not kind, and it's not something we wish it was more Disneyland version, but it's not. So you just have to grow up and deal with it. And okay, this is where we are. This is what reality is. Let's make the best of it and go forward.
And what about this idea that aliens could do the disclosure, that they could just park a UFO over every town in the world and show themselves? They haven't done it. Maybe they don't want it.
There are so many mass sightings, Simon. We could spend just an hour on mass sightings. I've debated this with Richard because he's done a number of podcasts. Why are they so clandestine? What clandestine? I mean, for the last 80 years, there have been, abductions, mass sightings, mass landings, not just in rural farm areas. Dennis Preston wrote a book concerning just landings in schoolyards. 100. I thought the African landing there, forget the name of it, where they landed at a school in Africa.
Ariel.
Yeah, the aerial school. I thought that was a one-off. And then I heard James Fox say, oh, no, there are dozens of these. So I started looking, and there's one in London. And then I look, whoa, wait, London. There's like three in London. And there's one in Australia. There's one here and there and there. There's over 100 just in schools. There were others. There was one in the, I believe it was in the 1980s, or a UFO landed in a park in Moscow, and these giant robots got out. It was seen by dozens of people. It was well documented, and they haven't been amiss that about communicating why they're here, at least what they claim, the reasons they claim to be here. They haven't kept it a secret. There's four things. So the first one, and it's been repeated a dozen times, is they want us to give up our nuclear weapons. To me, that's a no-go right from the start. It may be the only thing that prevents a full-scale invasion would be to give up our nuclear weapons. So that's a non-starter. The other thing, they constantly say, oh, we're destroying the planet. You know, we need to be better to the planet. Another one is they're sharing that there are imminent natural disasters on the way. Earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, solar flares, things of this nature. And the fourth one is that we're on our way to an extinction level event concerning humans. And that's something that I think there is some merit in. The last investigation I conducted was the Betty Andreessen incident. And we were investigating that in the late 70s, but her abduction, which again involved more than one individual, saw the aliens and landing and everything. That occurred in late, I believe it was 1968, her actual abduction. And these were gray aliens, and they told her that they were here to preserve the human race's seed, because in the future, you would not be able to reproduce. And if you look at the demographics from 1968 to present day, it just drops off the map. We're all the Western, not just Western civilizations, but even in more remote areas, population is dropping below the replacement line. And you have lower testosterone levels in men, less fertility in women. The reasons are not clear. There's probably dozens of them, you know, some environmental, some genetic, some cultural. But it seemed that what they shared with Betty, that we're headed towards not being able to reproduce, at least rings true. Those are the four things that they chat about all the time. Get rid of the weapons, you're destroying the planet, the natural disasters are on their way, and you're headed towards extinction. So that would explain, you know, why they're following, you know, abducting people and following genetic lines. Maybe doing a hybrid program, that's getting a lot more steam now. And that would have been considered really fringe. Even back in the 1970s, that's something that was just whispered about, that the aliens were abducting people and creating hybrids. But that information was there and it's stuck with it. Now it's becoming more mainstream that, yeah, that's a real thing. For what purposes? Who knows? And we only know what they're sharing with us. They could be giving us all kinds of, just lying through their little slits in their mouth. You know, they may be telling us all just fairy tales, and they have some other agenda or purpose. I thought back in the 70s, particularly from the Sergeant Moody abduction, when the alien leader told him that they're explorers, historians, doctors, traders, scientists, that, yeah, these are expeditionary excursions from other planets, looking at us, you know, in all those things. They're just researchers, basically. But when you crunch the numbers, and Richard and I have done this, and the numbers indicate from all the different UFO research organizations that we're looking at around 50,000 reported credible sightings to UFO research organizations around the world every year. And we estimate that that is only, that only one out of 10 are reported. So you have a great deal more that go unreported. So if it's only one out of 10, you're not looking at 50,000 sightings, you're looking at 500,000 sightings. And if each one of those craft pull, let's say, one to four aliens, you're looking at, you know, maybe as many as 2 million. Well, 2 million aliens visiting the planet in a single year, that's not just exploration. That's a soft colonization. There's a lot of speculation now that they may be living in the oceans, and there's some indication of that. This, back in the 70s, when I started researching, USOs, undersea objects, were not thoroughly, there definitely was a history of it, and there was recordings of it, but it wasn't anything that we really got into deep, because it, how do you research that? We didn't have any scuba gear or anything, submarines that we could go look. We were focusing on, you know, physical traces of landings and photographs and film in the 70s, eyewitness accounts. But USOs, no. But it, would that be a place that they could inhabit and colonize? Yeah, absolutely. And maybe, as many suggest, maybe they have been here for hundreds or thousands of years, and we're just now evolving to a point where we're taking more and more notice of them. Greater population, more cameras, more video opportunities. And maybe we're just becoming more and more aware of them. When I first started speaking to Richard, I sent him a picture of taken by a drone that was photographing an uncontacted tribe in the Amazon. And these poor people are looking up in the sky at, you know, what would be a quadcopter. These people don't even have metallurgy. You know, they're still in the Stone Age, and they're seeing this craft flying above them. Just imagine what they thought. This is the first time they've ever seen this. And I'm certain the look on their faces, they were scared to death. And imagine the stories that will, you know, be passed on about this thing that appeared in the sky and was hovering there. They're shooting arrows at it. They didn't know what to make of it. And I think we're somewhat falling in that same trap too, in that I think we could be overestimating the science, technology, and superior intelligence of these non-human creatures. We don't know that they developed the craft that they're flying. For all we know, they recovered it on their planet. Maybe a craft crashed on their planet and they back engineered it. Now they're using it. They maybe bought it from some other alien race. We have no idea how evolved they are, how old their civilization is, how intelligent they are. We've never given them an IQ test. In some instances, they don't seem to be very intelligent. In the Betty Barney Hill case, Betty is being medically examined by one set of aliens, and another alien examiner is examining Barney in another room, and he rushes in from Barney's examination with Barney's false teeth and shows it to the alien leader. And Betty said, she told me this herself, that they spoke to one another in a language that she didn't understand. But when they spoke to her, and it's the only one that spoke to her was the leader alien, and he spoke to her telepathically. And he asked Betty, why does Barney's teeth come out and yours don't? Well, that doesn't signify to me that these guys are like the beginning and end all of intelligence. I mean, I would think a very evolved, very scientifically evolved race would say, oh, okay, these are prophetic teeth that they install when their teeth fall out. But he didn't know. He had to ask Betty, you know, what these were. And she explained to him that you know, Barney's teeth fell out. These are false teeth and use them to chew and stuff. So we don't really know how evolved these creatures are or what they know or what they understand. They may be just, looking into our minds and using what we think and giving us disinformation. You know, we anthropomorphize them, that they must think and act like us. Well, they're nothing like us. So they probably don't think or act like us whatsoever. But we don't have anything else, no other frame of reference to base it on. So we think, oh, they must, if they have these really fantastic spacecraft, they must be highly evolved. Well, I know people with Ferraris and McLarens that couldn't change the oil on the damn things. You know, so that doesn't mean anything. We don't know where they got them or these craft or how much they know about them. For all we know, the craft operate the aliens, you know, maybe in some, you know, type of like we refer to, you know, AI. Maybe these civilizations are completely AI driven, and it's the machines that run the flesh and blood, you know, aliens, and they're the superior intellect on that planet. The machines are the hierarchy, and what we would call humans are the servants of the machines. We don't know. And if the government knows more than the average individual, which I'm sure they do, how much are they willing to share? How much can they share that wouldn't jeopardize our national security, or if fallen into the wrong hands, become a super weapon? There's some people that postulate, oh, you know, considering the humans, oh, we're so dangerous and we're going to destroy ourselves and the aliens are afraid we're going to go into space and pick a fight. To me, that's absolutely laughable. If you have the technology to harness gravity and to bend time and space, our nuclear weapons would be no more than a box of matches to them. If you can control gravity to move between stars, you could use that gravity to crush entire cities, to sink entire fleets. It would be an impenetrable force field. If you're traveling from star to star, you have far more dangerous things out in deep space than a nuclear explosion. You have neutron stars, gamma radiation, and things. A nuclear weapon would be like, you know, inventing bow and arrow to these technologies. So I don't think they do. We know that chimpanzees war with one another, war with other tribes. Are we afraid they're going to someday invent a nuclear weapon? No, we could care less. Yeah, we'll observe them. We'll study them. On occasion, might some paleontologists get too close, or primatologists get too close and get injured by a chimp or a silverback gorilla or something? Yeah, that's possible. And I think that's happened to some of these alien creatures, that they, you know, something happened and they got too close to maybe an unexpected radar pulse or something, and just it crashed the ship. I really think a lot of this stuff that we've recovered is simply alien space debris. That you know, there's some people that said, "Oh, they're gifting us things." I don't think so. I think that it's just expended equipment that they just, you know, either dropped from space or left abandoned that they don't need anymore. Let the chimps have it. You know, they don't care. I don't think they have any expectation that we could back engineering. And from what Lazar has described, I don't think we could. He postulated, and I agree with this, the thing, if you took a motorcycle back to the 1800s to a wagon train, what would they be able to do with this? They may be able to figure out how to turn it on, maybe even learn to ride it. But could they build it? Could they build another one? No, not at all. Imagine sending a nuclear reactor back to ancient Rome. Because people say, oh, you know, if we only had this technology, we would solve all, you know, energy needs. Really? Do we have that infrastructure? If you send a nuclear reactor back to ancient Rome, could it solve all their energy needs? Yeah, but they don't have the infrastructure to use it. Can you charge your phone with element 115? What are you going to plug it into the wall? There's no infrastructure to use this technology at this time. And it would probably take a, if we had it right now, they said, yes, this is what propels these ships. It uses gravity, it uses this element as fuel. We don't have the infrastructure to use it any more than the ancient Romans would have the infrastructure to use a nuclear reactor. So there are a lot of things that people just are fantasizing, they're romanticizing about what disclosure would be and how it would affect the human race. And I think we're a long way away from that. If we can fly some of their craft, and maybe we've used some of what we've learned to build similar craft, but without the same all the same capabilities. It may be that it runs on a very finite amount of fuel that we have, that we've recovered from some of these craft, and that when that's gone, it's gone, because that fuel comes from another planet or another star system, and when it's all gone, we don't have any more. And maybe that's why they haven't rolled out, you know, these alien reproduction vehicles, because, you know, maybe we've got just six or seven of them and a very limited amount of fuel. And once it's gone, we're good. So those are questions that I don't think the general public is really homing in on. They have a very narrow view of what this would mean. That there's just going to be this leap in technology if we roll this stuff out. I'm certain that if the equipment was more widely distributed through our science and engineering facilities, that we could learn more, but how quickly it would affect the planet, I'd say we're a long way off from how much we would benefit from it.
Well, it's been great talking to you again. Thanks a lot for coming back to the podcast.
Well, thank you for inviting me back. And please feel free to invite me anytime. There's so much more to discuss. Like I said, we haven't even discussed the Carter rollout, and we could do an hour just on that. What happened then and all the things that went on during that talk. I think your audience would find it fascinating.
That was an interview with Alan Levine about disclosure and its implications. My next book, titled Aspects of Alien Abduction, will be published on May 25th, and you can pre-order the Kindle version on Amazon. It will also be available on audiobook and on paperback. And my website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes, as is in the Patreon link, patreon.com/alienufopodcast. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favorite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.